So I wanted to do is a Gemara in Yesh Nochlan, my shir, towards the end of the year. Basically, since Pesach, we were doing Yesh Nochlan. It's a mostly halachic Gemara, but it's a halacha slash agada integrated Gemara. So I figured it would be a nice light-ish topic to take up. And I had come across it last week. I liked it, so I figured I would share. The other possibility was to get you guys started on Shemitah. Maybe I'll do that, which is what we're doing next year. Maybe I'll do some of the sugyas that I've been preparing in Shvi'it. I don't know what I'm doing with the guys exactly next year, but I have a chavrusa now in Shvi'it Yerushalmi Be'iyun, so I have fun sugyas to do there. But for today, we'll do well. You guys are still just a few days out of yeshiva, so let's pretend we're still in yeshiva, and we'll do Bava Basra. Okay, I'll pull up the sources. If you want, I can send them, but it's pretty basic sources here. You see this? You see the Gemara is in front of you now, right? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good. Fine. Okay, so let's take up this Gemara in on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. So the Gemara is dealing with questions of Yerusha Habat, as we'll see, of inheritance of the daughter, but in a very specific context. But I want to pay attention to the larger context here because it is quite odd, and it forces us to really try to understand what's going on here. That might be more than meets the eye. So the Gemara says as follows: Mistameich va'azil Rabbi Yanai akadfa de Reb Simloi shamei va'ati Rabbi Yehuda nesia le'apayu. I don't even know how that happened. I don't know how someone colored on the screen. That's fine. I just don't understand how that happened. That's fine. Okay, whoever did that, if you can remove it because it's blocking my Gemara. Let's see. I'll stop the share for a second and see if it goes away. Yes, it does. There we go. Okay. Fine. So back to the Gemara. So Rabbi Yanai is blind. Okay, that's the background here to the story. Rabbi Yanai is blind. So in order to get in to wherever he's going, to get where he's going, he's leaning on the shoulder of his shamash, right, which in this case is Reb Simlai. Okay, so he's leaning on the shoulders of Rebbe Simlai, and as he's now, one second, I want to be able to pull up something else also, but I pulled it up too early here. Okay. So Amar Le, so while he's leaning on him, Amar Le bar inish to ata likivlana hu yae vigulte yae. So as he's there, so Reb Simlai tells him again, because Rihanna is blind, he says that the person who's coming to you, he is beautiful, handsome, he looks prestigious, as does his garment. So kimata ligabe, so when he gets to him, gashisha. Now remember, this is Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. So who's Rabbi Yehuda Nesia? This gets a little bit confusing. It's not Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, it's Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, it's his grandson, but okay, fine. So he feels his clothing, right? This invokes sort of the scene of Yitzchak and Yaakov when Yaakov steals the brachot. And Amar Le, so he feels his clothing, which is supposed to be very prominent clothing, because Rabbi Yehuda Nesia is the leader. And he says, "Dein shiurei kesak." It feels, or its measurement is the same as sackcloth. Which is strange, right? I don't know why that's what he comments, but right, it's very, very odd situation here, right? Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, here is the leader of the Jewish people. He's coming to Rabbi Yanai. And what Rabbi Yanai has to say is that his clothes feel like, or are the same size as, or something like that, sackcloth. Okay, then it gets weirder, and he says, "Bo mine," and he asks him, "Minayin leben shekodem levat b'nichsei ha'im." How do you know that not only does a son have precedence over a daughter when it comes to the inheritance from the father? How do you know that a son has precedence in inheritance from his mother, just like he would with his father? So Omar Le, Dichtiv said, because it says matot, which means tribes. Makish mateha, aim mateha av, and we compare the tribe, the clan of the father to the mother. Ma mateha av ben kodim libat. Just like in the case of the tribe or the clan of the father, the son has precedence over the daughter. Af mateha'im ben kodim labat. So when it comes to the inheritance of that which comes from the mother's tribe or clan, the daughter, the son has precedence over the daughter. Amar le, so he said to him, I mateha'av b'chor notel pishnayim. But if that's the case, if you're going to compare the Yerusha that comes from a father and a mother, so then the Bechor should get double. And Af Mataim Bechor Notel Pishnayim. So just like in the father's case, right, the Bechor gets double from his father. So the same thing should be true with the mother. The problem is that's not the halacha. The halacha of Bechor only applies to inheritance that comes from the father, not from the mother. So far, this is a very halachic discussion, right? Meaning, right, I'll pause before you get to the surprising last line, right? So far, this is all normal, right? Meaning, we have a halachic discussion. They're trying to figure out the nature of Yerusha that comes from the mother. They have a certain level of comparison between father inheritance from the father, inheritance from the mother. And therefore, since we compare them, the follow-up question is, why don't we compare them completely? Meaning, why do we compare them such that a son is precedence over a daughter, but we don't compare them to the Bechor gets double, right? So far, anything weird about this Gemara, right? Besides for the blinds and the feeling of the clothing, right? The halachic discussion seems pretty normal, right? Pretty normal, I think. And then it just ends very abruptly. Amar Leil Shammai. So after Rabbi Yehuda Nisi'a said this question, which is, maybe this is not true. If once you're going to compare them, so then you should compare them even for Bechor. Amar Leil Shammai, so he tells his Shammai, she tells Reb Simlai, good, let Dein Tzvi Lemelav, get him out of here. Kick him out, because this guy doesn't want to learn Torah. And that's the end of the story. Okay? I see Adam's face, right? And Adam's looking at this, I don't understand, right? Like, what did he do wrong, right? Can you imagine, right? Like, Adam is sitting in Rav Ginsburg's shir. He asks a kasha, maybe it's a decent kasha, maybe it's not the best kasha in the world, I don't know, right? He throws out a svara, and Rav Ginsburg says, get out of here. Clearly, you don't want to learn, right? I mean, right? It's very odd, right? What did he say that was so bad? What happened, right? Like, I mean, you don't like the question. A lot of people ask questions that are bad questions. Trust me, right? I've been teaching for a while. I've done question and answer. No offense to anybody, but there are bad questions. I've never kicked anybody out. Yosef is cracking up. Okay, fine. Or Chaim Soloveitchik, as it says on his screen. Okay, fine. Fine, yalla. What? Yeah, exactly. Okay, fine. So we got to figure out is what is going on here. Meaning, what my makashur. Right, what is go what is this makes no sense. Meaning he asks a question, it's not an unreasonable question, and he kicks him out. Right? The blind Rabbi Yannai decides. Okay. So we gotta figure out. We've got to sort of figure out what is going on. So the analysis I'm gonna share with you mostly comes from two articles by Rabbi Yonatan Feintuch, who writes excellent articles on Agadata. I was just going through them because I was starting to, work on Agadatot for next year. But he doesn't organize it by Masechta, he just has a collection. So I happen to notice he had this one in Yesh Nochlin. So I'm like, okay, let's see what it's about. And this is his analysis. Okay. So he said, look, we gotta figure it out, right? Meaning there's something odd going on. We need to figure out what made Rabbi Yannai so angry at this question. So in order to figure it out, we need to get a little bit of background into this sugya. So if you look at the Mishnah, The second mission, the eighth parak, of Basra, number two, tells you, Seder, Nachalot, Kachu. Right? These is the order of inheritance. Ish ki yamut, uven ein lo, vahavartem, et nachalato, levito. Right? The inheritance goes like this. It quotes the pasuk, ben kodem levat, v'kol yotzei yirecho shel ben kodmin levat. Right? So this is the background halacha that we know. Right, which is that sons come before daughters. Right, that's the Mishnah. That's the background that we know. Sons come before daughters. Guys in my shir know that it seems to be more than just they get precedence. It seems to be there might be a qualitative difference between the Yerusha of a son and that of a daughter, which is already implied in the Psukim, because the Psukim that introduce Yerusha of a daughter don't say a son inheritance. They say if there is no son, so then a daughter inherits. Right, which implies that the inheritance of a son is obvious, right? It's some sort of natural law or accepted universal law or something like that. And sons always come before. Now, we don't know from the Mishnah, however, whether, coming back to our halachic question, whether that's only true of a father's inheritance, which is the context in the original Parsha in Bamidbar Chav Zayin, or if it applies to the inheritance that comes from a mother as well. So if you look at the Tosefta here, number three, you discover that this is in fact a machloket. The Tanakama in the Tosefta says as follows: Ukishem shehaben kodem et habat binichsei haav, kach kodem haben et habat binichsei haem. So the first position in the Tosefta is like the accepted position that we have in our Gemara, right? The position of Rabbi Yanai, which is that just like a son has precedence in the inheritance that comes from his father, so too he has precedence in the inheritance that comes from his mother, right? So that is exactly like the position of Rabbi Yanai. But Rabbi Elazar bi Rabbi Yossi omer mishem Rabbi Zecharia ben Akatsav. But Rabbi Elazar bi Rabbi Yossi quotes Rabbi Zecharia ben Akatsav. V'chein hoya Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda ish kvar ivus omer mishum Rabbi Shimon. And this is also another position of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda in the name of, from kvar ivus, in the name of Rabbi Shimon. Echad haben v'echad habat shovin b'nechzei ha'im. The son and the daughter are in fact equivalent in the inheritance from a mother. So now the mystery grows. Because not only did Rabbi Yanai kick out Rabbi Yehuda for a question that implied that under certain circumstances, either you treat the inheritance of sons and daughters from a mother exactly the same as you do from a father, or you don't, right? And therefore, right, you discover that there is a more extreme position that actually says, look, it's in fact the case that the Yerusha of mothers is different, right? Meaning, our Gemara, Rabbi Yanai takes it as a given that they are the same. Based on that, Rabbi Yehuda said, well, if they're the same, so then they should be the same for the Bechor also. But when you look at the Tosefta, you discover that there's a position that, in fact, they're different. They're fundamentally different, not just for Bechor, right? They're fundamentally different, meaning there's a much more extreme position articulated here on the Tosefta, which is that when it comes to the inheritance, it comes from a mother, the laws of precedence that give a son inheritance before a mother is just not true. So now we have this extra piece of the puzzle, which is that Rabbi Yehuda simply asked a question about, you know, challenging the assumption that Nichse Ha'em and Nichse Av are the same when it comes to regular Yerusha based on Halacha of Bechor. But here we discover in the Tosefta that there's actually a divergent position who says, no, it's really true that the inheritance that comes from a mother is just radically different than the inheritance that comes from a son. So now, right, we have this extra piece of the puzzle to try to figure out what's going on, right? Meaning, we understand now that Rabbi Yehuda isn't working in a vacuum. There are other positions floating around that are in the background. Meaning his question, right, isn't just an exegetical question. It's not just, well, if you assume that the inheritance of a son has precedence over that of the daughter and the chasim of the mother, then what you're really saying is that a father and mother are equivalent for these purposes of Bechor should apply. It's not just a question, right? It's a question which shares certain assumptions with a more radical position, right? So that already begins to give us a clue of what might be going on. However, this position, right, the primary position that we have in our Gemara, as you see in number four, is not that which equates them. Not that which distinguishes, but that which equates, right? The same daf, mi matot, makish mate ha'em mate ha'av, ma mate ha'av ben kodem lebat, av mate ha'em ben kodem levat. Now, furthermore, we know that in our tradition, not that of the Tosefta, but in the Mishnah, again, the dominant position is that the only difference between father and mother inheritance is the Bechor, right? But again, not the inheritance, the precedence of son over daughter, right? Echad ben ve'echad bat. Benachala ela shaben notel pishnayim benichzei ha'av ve'eino notel pishnayim benichzei ha'em, right? Sons and daughters, right? The halachot are the same except for the halachot of Bechor. Okay, so let's turn back to our Agadata and try to figure out what is going on, right? With this background, let's try to figure out what it was that made Rabbi Yanai this angry. I'm going to switch back and forth here from the sources and from this article, but I'll show it to you. I got a chat. Okay, Donnie, we'll miss you when you leave. You can listen to the recording for whatever you miss. Okay, let us here. Okay, so I'm going to pull up this article for a second from Jonathan Feintuch. I'll pull up the English version to make your lives easier. If you want, I can pull up the original, but it is translated. Right? So here he quotes the analysis by Yonah Frankel. So Yonah Frankel wrote a book, probably, I think, several books on Agadata. So first he quotes his analysis, right? And he says, right, why did Rabbi Yanai become angry? I mean, what is it, right? What is it that made Rabbi Yanai so angry that simply because Rabbi Yehuda asked a question, he kicked him out? So he writes as follows. The story as noted above consists of two parts. The first is a conversation between Rabbi Yanai and his attendant about the external appearance of Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, who approaches them. From the opening description, we deduce that Rabbi Yanai was old and blind. He feels the garment that the Nasi wears, but does not address him at all. He shares his estimation of the garment with his attendant. Right? So that's the first half of the discussion. In the second part of the story, the Nasi addresses a question to Rabbi Yanai with regard to the opinion in the Tosefta cited previously, according to which the son takes precedence over the daughter, even in the mother's assets. In response, Rabbi Yanai quotes a teaching based on the word mimatot, which had previously been mentioned as proof of the opinion of the Tanakhama. The teaching compares the assets of the father and the mother and deduces that in both cases, the son takes precedence. Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya goes on to ask whether the plural tribes upon which the comparison is based might perhaps be meant to teach a different lesson relating to the inheritance of a firstborn. In other words, he suggests the same comparison be drawn between the assets of the mother and the assets of the father, but the conclusion that in both cases the firstborn takes a double portion. This stands contrary to the law that appears in the Mishnah later in the chapter that we just read. So now here's where we get to the surprising part of the story. So surprisingly, instead of offering a reasoned response, Rabbi Yanai becomes angry. He reverts to addressing his attendant rather than Yehuda Nisiya, complaining. This man does not want to learn. Why is Rabbi Yanai angry? What causes him to react to Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya's question in this manner? So, Professor Yonah Frankel notes that in the first part of the story, Rabbi Yanai, like other blind sages who feature in other Agadot, is not impressed by the external appearance of the man coming towards him. Rather, he sees through it. Indeed, it would seem that people who are unable to appreciate the outer facade of objects or people are more sensitive to their inner essences. Rubiana is not the least awed by the luxurious garment, which, as he sees it, quote-unquote, is worth no more than sackcloth, an outer covering which has no value in its own right and says nothing about the man wearing it. The halachic background to the comparison of Rabbi Nisiyah's garment to sackcloth, as Frankel explains, relates to the laws of ritual purity and impurity. In terms of these laws, the capacity of the garment to contract impurity is not a function of its appearance or its value, and therefore, from this point of view, there is no essential difference between a fine, expensive garment and simple, coarse sackcloth. Right? So for the first part of the story, what Frankel argues is that this is following an agadic tradition that blind people are better at seeing the essence of people because they're not blinded, right, essentially, by sight, right? The irony, right? Meaning people who can see are often led astray by physical things, but he isn't because he's blind. And therefore, while his servant, Kanireh, is impressed with Behuda Nisiyah's grand clothing, Rabbi Yanai sees a more penetrating view using his internal sight rather than his external sight, and he uses a mashal essentially from the laws of Toma and Tahara, which is that it doesn't matter what the clothes look like, it matters the size, and that's it. That's all that determines it. Okay, fine. Let's assume that's true. That what we learn from the first half of the story is that Rabbi Yanai, being blind, has an inner perception, a spiritual perception, that Rabbi Simlai does not. However, how does that connect to the halachic thing? So we move then to the story of the precedence of the daughter over the son, right again. We don't have to do the story again. So why does this anger Rabbi Yanai, and does this have anything to do with the previous half of the story, right? The blindness and the clothing. Okay. So Frankel offers the following suggestion, and he needs two clues. One is a slightly different version of the story found in a manuscript, and the second is the connection between the outer framework of the story and its inner halachic content. So the first thing that Frankel notes is that there's another girsa, in which the halachic exchange, there is no mention of he said to him, but only he asked him at the outset. Meaning, according to this version, the whole exchange with his question and answer is a sort of debate that the questioner maintains with himself. Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah wonders about the source of the law of awarding priority to a son over a daughter and the mother's assets, and answers his own question, the well-known teaching. On this basis, he then asks another question, proposing a teaching that goes against the halakha. Frankel views this debate of Yehuda Nisiyah, repeating a known question and its answer as an introduction to his second question, as an attempt to impress Rabbi Yanai. He is perhaps only pretending to want to learn. Moreover, Frankel views his teaching that goes against the known halacha as an attempt to lead Rabbi Yanai into a trap. And it is this that angers Rabbi Yanai, right? So Frankel's read is that Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah is in fact trying to bait Rabbi Yanai. This is not a question answer. It's Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah himself basically creating a dialogue to catch Rabbi Yanai in a logical trap, right? And that's what gets him angry. Now, according to this, Frankel thinks that the whole story is very critical of Rabbi Yanai, and it easily connects the two parts of the story. Because according to Frankel, this is how you read the story. Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah comes. He looks grand. He looks like a Talmud Chacham. Then the blind Talmud Chacham feels his clothing, says, you know what? This is just sackcloth, meaning I see through him, which means that you've already been primed to see Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah not as a real Talmud Chacham, but as someone that's just there to pick a fight. So despite his outward appearance as a prominent person, it's not true. And with that background, you then launch into a discussion where Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah doesn't really care for the truth. What he does is he's creating a series of logical questions to basically bait Rabbi Yanai into an impossible situation, right? Where he's going to undermine him and say, aha, you see that the normal halacha, it isn't consistent if you follow it through with the drasha, right? So that's Frankel's way of reading this whole story, is that The first half of the story, the agadic part of the story, tells us that Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah is a shallow person. The halachic discussion is, in fact, Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah not trying to learn Torah, but trying to basically bait Rabbi Yanai. And when those two things coalesce, meaning Rabbi Yanai's original intuition that Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah is a shallow person, plus the evidence of that from the fact that Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah doesn't really want to learn Torah, he just wants to sort of come up with logical questions and challenge the accepted halacha, which is that a son inherits before a daughter, even Yerusha'im, but he doesn't get Yerusha Bechor. The combination of his original intuition that he's being shallow, and then this evidence from the halachic discussion that he doesn't really want an answer, he's just sort of talking to himself to get to a contradiction. That's when Rabbi Yanai kicks him out and says clearly he doesn't want to learn Torah. Okay? Right, so this is this is Frankel's analysis. And as Feintuch then adds, in order to bolster this read, you can note that by hinting to the story of Yaakov stealing the brachot, right? Because here you have a blind elderly person feeling the clothing of someone who's coming into him, which obviously invokes that story. By invoking a story of deceit and the like, right, you are setting the stage for us questioning the authenticity of Rabbi Yehuda's Yehuda Nisiyah's halachic argumentation. Okay, that is how Frankel understands the story, and that's why he gets so angry, and that's why he kicks him out. However, Feintuch notes that this doesn't seem to be the only way to read it. And that's because, as we know, as we mentioned before, this isn't the only position in the Gemara, right? Meaning, as we know already from the Tosefta, there was a position that denied the comparison of Yerushalayim and to Yerushalayim, and argued that when it came to a mother's inheritance, in fact, sons and daughters inherit the same. And once you have that halachic reality in the background, so then how can you just say that Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah doesn't want to learn? Right? Meaning Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah is responding to an actual halachic position. Good. So if it's an actual halachic position, right? Meaning there's actually a position that goes farther and doesn't just say that, right? And actually says, look, in the end of the day, if Bechor doesn't apply to Yerushalayim, that's because Yerushalayim is fundamentally different than Yerushalav. And therefore, the halacha is also going to be that a son doesn't have precedence. If a mother has a son and a daughter, so she gives 50% to the son, 50% to the daughter, right? And therefore, he's asking a legitimate question that follows a legitimate halachic position. So now this only deepens the question. Why is Rabbi Yanai so angry? Right? Meaning, why is Rabbi Yanai angry if this question is actually a good question with a background halachic position? So, here, Frankel notes that the key seems to not be what Feintuch notes, is that the key seems to be that not all positions are live, right? So if you continue in the Gemara, you discover that despite the fact in the Tosefta, this is just presented as two different positions. The Tanakhama says that even when you have a mother, the son gets first, and only if there's no son does a daughter get. And Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzav says that it's not true, that a son and daughter inherit equivalently. In the Gemara, you discover that these aren't two positions of equal weight. So if you continue in that same Gemara, the Gemara says as follows, Rabbi Nitai savar lemevar uvda ki Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzav. Rabbi Nitai tried to paskin, to act like Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzav. And when a mother died, he tried to give equivalent inheritance to the son and the daughter. Amar le Shmuel, Shmuel said to him, Kiman, who are you following? Ki Zechariah? You're following Zechariah? Efes Zachariah. Zachariah is nothing. Right? He's nothing. Right? That position is nothing. Rabbi Tavla of an Uvda Kirby Zachariah ben Akatzav. Rabbi Tavla also tried to rule like Zachariah ben Akatzav. Omer le Reb Nachman, or Nachman yelled at him, "My high, what are you doing?" Omer le, Omer Rav Chanina, Chanina bar Shlami, Mishmei de Rav. He said, "Because I heard from Reb Chanina in the name of Rav, halacha Kirby Zachariah ben Akatzav, that this is the halacha." Omer le, Zila Hadarbach. He said, "Retract your psak, v'ilo, and if you don't retract, Maftina lecha Reb Chanina bar Shlamya mei oneich." Right? If you don't retract, so I'm going to pull Rabbi Chanina bar Shlamya out of your ears. Right? If you don't do this, I'm going to pull him out of your ears. Meaning, right? I don't know exactly what that means, but something painful, right? I'm going, whatever it is. We probably have ruder ways of saying similar things. Rav Huna bar Chiya, Savar lemevet uvda k'Rabbi Zachariah min hakatzav. Rav Huna also tried to follow Rav Zachariah min hakatzav. Amar le Rav Nachman, my high. Again, Rav Nachman yells at him. Amar le, damar Rav Huna, amar Rav Allah k'Rabbi Zachariah min hakatzav. Amar le, ashlech le. He said, really? He said that? Go ask him. Ichsev, and he got embarrassed. Kihad Rav Shmuel Dami Travayu, because everybody agrees. Rav and Shmuel are in agreement. Ein halacha k'Rabbi Zachariah ben Akatzav. So now, Feintuch says he thinks that there's another way to understand this agadita. And that is that it's not a problem. It's not that Zachariah ben Akatzav is a bad person. Sorry, it's not that Yehuda Nasiya is a bad person. This is a halachic problem. Namely, that sometimes you have a halachic position that is rejected. Really, really rejected. And by Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya raising questions that challenge the authenticity of the accepted position, namely, that even when it comes to inheritance from a mother, the son comes first, he's giving credence to a position that was actively and forcefully rejected by the majority of Chazal. And therefore, what he argues is that the anger of Rabbi Yanai is that Rabbi Yanai, by asking this question, he isn't just asking a question. What he's essentially doing is, giving credence to a position that was forcefully rejected. And in fact, if you look at the Gemara in Kuf Chof Bet, the discussion of the Bechor actually does come up. And the Gemara deals with why Bechor is different. And therefore, right, he argues that what's going on here is that the anger that you find Rabbi Yana is actually halachic, right? It's not a claim about Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya's personality, right? It's a halachic problem, is that he sees that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is of that group of people who grant credence to the position of Zachariah ben Akatzav, and therefore he attacks him because that position is supposed to be dead. And just like you see all the anger of all the other people in the Gemara, he's also part of that. Now, that doesn't fully answer the question, because why are they so angry? Meaning, okay, fine, we've moved one step closer. We've said that he's angry because he sees this as a quasi-support to the position of Zachariah ben Akatzav. But what's so bad about that? Meaning, right, what is so bad about that? So here, Feintuch notes rather, that yet another version seems to emerge if you look at the Yerushalmi. So here, if you look at the, I'll whatever. We'll read the English of the Yerushalmi here. This is the Yerushalmi's version. Rabbi Yonah and Rabbi Yochanan were sitting together. Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya came and asked, what is the meaning of the verse, and every daughter who possesses inheritance in any of the tribes? He said to him, this compares the tribe of the father to the tribe of the mother. Just as with regard to the father's tribe, the daughter has no inheritance where there is a son, so likewise with regards to the mother's tribe, the daughter has no inheritance where there is a son. Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya asked, perhaps, or alternatively, we may deduce, just with regard to the mother's tribe, the daughter does inherit even when there is no son. So likewise, with regard to the father's tribe, the daughter inherits even where there is a son. Whereupon Rabbi Yochanan said to Rabbi Yonah, let us move on from here. This man does not wish to hear a word of Torah. Now, this is in many ways similar to the Bavli, but there are certain differences. So first of all, Rabbi Yochanan is the main character and not Rabbi Yonah. Second of all, there is none of this discussion of his external appearance. The entire discussion here is about drashot, right? So there seems to be even less of an idea why everyone would be angry here, right? Meaning, what's wrong here? I don't, you know, there is none of this assumption like Frankel has that he's shallow because you don't have the feeling of the clothing. So what's going on? Why in the Yerushalmi, why is he so angry? So what he argues is that there's one more key here, and this is something we talked about a bit during Zman, and that is the following. That there was a non-Jewish position floating around in the time of Chazal, where the sages of the nation say that a son and a daughter are equal to each other in matters of inheritance. For they deduce from the words, and he has no son, written in Ben Ein Lo, that if he does have a son, then the son and daughter are equal. The sages ask them, but it is written, and if he has no daughter, does not this mean that if he has a daughter, they're equal? You acknowledge that there's no son, no direct descendant, so here too, there is no son. So there's this non-Jewish position, right, which is floating around, and it happens to be Roman law as well, that sons and daughters inherit equally. And the Gemara quotes this as a drasha and then rejects it. In the Yerushalmi, it's after this rejection of the min of the position of the non-Jews, the daughters and sons inherit equally, that the Yerushalmi brings in the angry response of Rabbi Yochanan, in this case, to Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya's suggestion. So here Feintuch offers his third possibility, and that's this. In view of the broader context of the sugya, Rabbi Yochanan's anger makes sense. Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya raises a proposal that is in fact identical to the view of the non-Jewish sages, a view that is addressed and opposed by the sugya from the outset. His proposal goes against the most fundamental assumption arising from the biblical text and forming the basis of the halakha and the laws of inheritance, that where the father's estate is concerned, the sons inherit, while the daughters do not. The Gemara defends this view at the beginning of the sugya by attacking the view of the non-Jewish sages and perhaps also attacking the Jews who are swayed by this different fundamental assumption. It's against this background, apparently, that Rabbi Yochanan asserts that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is not interested in listening to Torah. So what we have here is three different explanations for why what seems to be a local halachic question, which is, does a daughter inherit equally to a son when in the inheritance of an aim? Which Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya's question on that, which is, if you're going to say in the end of the day that a son inherits before a daughter because Yerusha that comes from others like Yerusha from the father, then you should treat it as the same for Bechor as well. And to response to that, Rabbi Yonah in the Bavli and Rabbi Yochanan the Yerushalmi yell at him and they kick him out. We wondered, why is he so angry? So here now we have three possibilities, right? One is Frankel's possibility, which is that you have to read the story as integrated. Rabbi Yonah already had an intuition from his clothes that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya was a shallow person. And therefore, he was already sensitive to looking to anything that he would say that would bolster his conviction that he wasn't a real Talmud Chacham. according to him, the way that he saw that was that this wasn't a dialogue. It was Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya basically taking accepted halacha and asking a bunch of questions until he got to a contradiction. So according to Frankel, the problem is that according to Rabbi Yanai, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya doesn't really care about Torah. That's why he critiques his clothing. And that's why he critiques the way he learns Torah, because he sees someone who's just trying to create problems, who's not really committed. Feinjoch has two possibilities. One possibility, based on the previous Gemara in the Bavli, where every single person who raised the position of Zechariah ben Akatzav, that daughters and sons inherit equally from the Yerusha of the Aim, they got yelled at. He says, apparently, there was, right, a huge machloket about it, and consistently, the poskim were trying to make it clear that we paskin not like Zechariah ben Akatzav, and therefore is part of the vehemence to ensure that everyone understood the halacha, people who challenged that or raised questions that might imply that we paskin differently, it elicited a harsh response in order to make it clear what the halacha was, which is that sons inherit before daughters, even Yerusha Na'im. Possibility three, based on the context in the Yerushalmi, that brings this right after the position of the non-Jews, which is that even in the Yerusha of the father, sons and daughters inherit equally, is that this is a polemical problem. Is that since there's a non-Jewish position floating around that sons and daughters are equivalent in Yerusha, so any implication that under any circumstances we accept a view that's similar to that of the non-Jews, it's not just a halachic problem. It's not just that you're wrong, it's that you're basically giving up the Jewish position in favor of the Roman position or the Jews who have adopted Roman culture. And therefore, it's not just a halachic problem, right? The reason it elicits such anger is because there's a polemical element to it where you're rejecting not just the halacha, but you're rejecting the commitment to a Roman worldview in which, in fact, sons and daughters inherit equally and the laws of Yerusha, as presented in the Gemara, are not true. So that's Feinjoch's second possibility. The third way of understanding this quasi-halachic, hashkafic, agada halacha, I don't even know what to call it. Feinjoch then just adds, I'm going to skip a little bit over here, and note that there is one more element that is important to fully understand the Agadata. And that is the following. Right now, again, if you look on Daf Kuf Yud, that's where the Gemara had said, right, had actually explicitly rejected this, right? Hachi Kaimna, Ika Ben Uvat, Lohai Lirish Kule, Lirish Kule, Elekia Dali Lirtu, right? The Gemara had actually addressed the possibility that they inherit equally, but we won't go back to that. Feinjoch notes that there's one more midrash that seems to fill out the picture of this Agadata, and that is a midrash in Vayikra Rabba, which is also a story of Rabbi Yanai. So in Vayikra Rabba, the story is told as follows. Maiser Rabbi Yanai shayim halech baderech. Rabbi Yanai was once traveling. Pagabo adam echad shayim shupa biyoter. He met somebody who was very hunched over. Amar lo, you know what, I'm just going to make this easier for you. The words are a bit hard. I'm going to make this easier for you here. Especially on Zoom. Okay. Here. Right. So it once happened that Rabbi Yanai was walking on his way and he met a man who was extremely distinguished. Rabbi Yanai said to him, "Sir, would you agree to be hosted by us?" He replied, "As you desire." They brought him into his home. Rabbi Yanai said to him, "Lead the grace after meals." He said, "Let Yanai lead the grace in his own home." He said, "Are you able to repeat back something that I say for you?" He replied, "Yes." Rabbi Yanai said, "A dog has eaten Rabbi Yanai's bread." Okay? Right? Meaning if you're not capable of benching, you are a dog. The man got up and grabbed him. He said, "You are holding my inheritance and preventing me from it." Rabbi Yanai answered, "What inheritance of yours do I have?" He said, "From early childhood we chant Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe Morasha Kilat Yaakov. The Torah was commanded us by Moshe as an inheritance. The verse does not conclude the words of the congregation of Yanai," right? "Morasha Kilat Yanai. Ella Kilat Yaakov. Meaning, yes, I don't know Torah, but you're holding Torah from me. That's your fault. So after they were reconciled, Rabbi Yannai asked him, why were you deserving of eating at my table? He told him, I've never heard an evil word from or about someone and returned an evil word to that person, nor have I ever seen two people fighting without restoring peace between them. Rabbi Yannai said to him, you possess such civility and I called you a dog. And he applied to him the verse, to him that orders his way aright, I will show the salvation of God. So why does he find to think that this story is connected to Aragadita? So he says the following. In this story, Rabbi Yannai is impressed by the external appearance of the man he meets. Rabbi Yannai invites the man to his home. During the course of their meal, Rabbi Yannai tries to engage him in conversation about Gemara, Mishnah, anything. But it turns out the man is an ignoramus. Eventually, Rabbi Yannai invites him to leave the grace after meals and discovers the man does not even know that. Here, Rabbi Yannai grows angry. Whether he's angry at the man or at himself is not clear. In any event, he directs his anger towards his guest, humiliating the guest and comparing him to a dog. The man promptly rebukes Rabbi Yannai for his attitude and behavior, and ultimately the two men are reconciled. Rabbi Yannai discovers the man may not be a learned sage, but he possesses another important quality. He pursues peace, taking care not to hurt those who have hurt him, not to gossip, and tries to reconcile others who have quarreled. The story ends with Rabbi Yannai being impressed all over again, this time with justification. He acknowledges his mistake, both in having offended his guest and in having gauged him only in terms of his wisdom, while in fact there are many other areas that are no less important. It is clear from the story that the area in which Rabbi Yannai stumbled, the realm of proper interpersonal conduct, is his guest's special strength. Rabbi Yannai realizes that he was wrong both in his estimation of the guest's outer appearance, mistaking him for a scholar, and in his negative reaction upon discovering that he was not a scholar at all. Ultimately, the guest has other fine qualities. We might perhaps suggest in hindsight, Rabbi Yannai's favorable intuitive impression of the man causing him to invite him to his home was actually correct, but not for the reasons that Rabbi Yannai had in mind. Perhaps there was indeed something positive that radiated from the man beyond his garments, something of his character. We sometimes meet people of special personalities drawing us to them, even though we cannot define what their special quality is. Rabbi Yannai was mistaken in his initial interpretation of the situation. He was thinking only of greatness in Torah scholarship. He assumed that the man's outer majesty, supposedly reflecting his vast knowledge, was what drew him to him. Later, he discovered that there are other parameters that may cause even an ignoramus to radiate greatness, right? And then he gives him Musar, etc. And eventually, Rabbi Yannai learns to be impressed by other qualities besides Talmud Torah. So now, Feintuch asks, so what is the relationship between the two stories about Rabbi Yannai? Since the stories are found in two separate sources and do not relate directly to another, it's difficult to make any decisive statement in this regard. Nevertheless, it seems there is some connection between them, and we might perhaps enrich our understanding of the story in the Bavli by keeping in mind the story in Vayikra Rabbah. The story of the encounter with the Rehuta Nesia, at least in its first part, like the story of the encounter with the distinguished man, deals with Biyanai's attitude towards an outer appearance to which his attendant draws his attention. But Biyanai is unmoved. Perhaps he has internalized the message of his previous encounter. Later on, Rehuta Nesia displays his ability to analyze verses and deduce the law, recalling the test that Rabbi Yannai gave his guest, who failed on all accounts. Here it becomes clear, in light of the lesson that Rabbi Yannai learned, why he now refuses to view Rabbi Yehuda Nesia's majestic garments as anything other than an outer shell. He sees Rabbi Yehuda Nesia has no real desire to learn Torah, and so he wants to distance himself from him. It may therefore be that the similarity between the images that introduce the two stories is not coincidental. Perhaps the story in the Bavli is a sort of repair from Biyanai's perspective for his encounter with ignoramus. As we have seen, Rabbi Yannai's anger to Rabbi Yehuda Nesia in the Bavli serves the halachic aims of the sugya, and it's for this reason apparently that is included. However, we might still ask whether Rabbi Yannai was justified in his attitude towards Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, or whether in his attempt to implement the lessons learned in the past, he went overboard in his treatment of the Nasi, who was, after all, a scholar himself. This question, to which I don't have a definitive answer, remains for the reader to reflect on. Right, so what he argues is as follows. Yes, Yaakov. Good, right, so that's essentially what Feintuch says, right? You're saying a little bit different, like, right? Meaning, Feintuch is saying you should look at the two stories together. You're saying very simply, the way the two stories go together is that Rabbi Yannai breaks the trope, right? Normally we talk about, you know, blind people, though apparently in the early story he wasn't blind, as having some deep spiritual sense that they can see who's good, and it turns out he's wrong both on both accounts, right? Feintuch has a slightly different approach, which is, clearly in the story in Vayikarabba, he's a bad judge of character, because first he thinks the guy is great, then he thinks he's not great because he thinks the only greatness comes from scholarship, and then he says, oh, you know what, it turns out that no, you can be great even if you're not a scholar, because you can be a good person in Ben Adam Lachavera. Feintuch says that he was so thrown by his mess up in that story that when it came to Yehuda Nisiya, he went overboard in the opposite direction, right? He actively forced himself to not be impressed by outer clothing and maybe not even be impressed by Torah and say, oh, your Torah isn't real either. It's just intellectual games, right? Now, you could look at that in two ways. You could either say he was right about Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, and he learned from the first story that intellectual capabilities in Torah is not everything. Or you can say, the way you're saying, or Feintuch is saying slightly differently, is no. Rabbi Yanai is just an overly harsh critic, right? He judges the Am Haaretz because he's an Am Haaretz, and it takes a long time for him to be convinced that there's a value in Am Haaretz. And when it comes to a Talmud Chacham, well, he judges him wrongly because he says, oh, you're not a real Talmud Chacham, you don't really care. Yeah, it could be that in addition to the local version of the story, what you learn is that, yeah, Rabbi Yanai either in general is a bad judge of character or is a bad judge of character because he's overcompensating, which makes him a bad judge of character. Right, that's exactly why Feintuch thinks that these stories are connected. Yeah, and again, do you have to say, like, he's saying that it's an overcompensation, or can you just say, like, you are, which is that Rabbi Yanai is just a bad judge of character, and that's what you see in the two stories? Both of those are possible, right? Either one, right? You know, are they chronological? I don't know. Okay, so just to review what we've seen, right? So we had this very bizarre Agadata where just because, first of all, Rabbi Yanai feels his clothing and says that, like, sackcloth, right? Don't trust him as a Nasi, whatever. And then, because he raises some halachic arguments, he starts yelling at him and kicks him out. So why? So again, we had three possibilities. Frankel's possibility, which is that the whole point of the story is a critique of superficiality. Rabbi Yanai is telling you, I feel his clothes, he may look great, but this is just superficial. And the proof is that, look, he doesn't really want to learn Torah, he's just trying to catch me in an intellectual catch-22. He's trying to undermine me, mind me. You see that all he really cares about is intellectual gymnastics and not Torah, right? Version one. Version two is, in light of the fact that there seemed to have been a huge machloket in Zechari ben Akatzav's position, the reason he's angry is because, right, the same reason in the beginning of Brachot, you find that anyone who paskens like Beit Shammai, right, they yell at them, they say you deserve to die, things like that, is once a position is sort of really, really rejected, defending it is problematic, right? You have to assert that this is the halacha, possibility two. Possibility three is it's not just this is a rejected position, but since equality of Yerusha between men and women is the non-Jewish position articulated by the Romans, any implication that we might agree with the Roman position, it's not just a rejected position, it's an embrace of a foreign philosophy, and that's particularly pernicious, and therefore has to be rejected heavily, which is the way Feintuch reads the Yerushalmi. And point four is, leaving aside the Yerusha point, what do we learn about Rabbi Yanai's personality? The fact that we have these two stories in which he seems to misjudge people. So, possibility one is that he was shallow in the story in Vayikarabba of the unlearned person, and he's successful in our story, and he isn't led astray, not by grandeur, not by Talmidei Chachamim, and he's right about Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya. All the way the other extreme is Yaakov's point, which is, the point of these two stories is to tell you that Rabbi Yanai is a bad judge of character. He can't, right? He misjudges Amaratzim, he misjudges Talmidei Chachamim, he misjudges everybody. He's overly sensitive to these things. Or sort of a hybrid position, which is maybe he's in general, you know, a decent judge of character, but because he was a bad judge of character of the Am Haaretz, where he failed to realize that the guy was a really good person, that sort of makes him overcompensate, right? And even when you have someone who legitimately is a Talmud Chacham, because he's learned that there's more to life than being a Talmud Chacham, he's like, right, he's overcompensating and being unfair to Talmidei Chachamim, which is not quite as far as Yaakov, which is that maybe he's always a bad judge of character, but maybe that, you know, sometimes a bad judge of character because his history of misjudging has made it that certain situations set him off in a way that, right, might not be accurate. Okay, so that is some mix of halacha. I got it on Baba Basra, so we can feel like we're still learning Yesh Nochlen. It was good to see everybody. I know it hasn't been so long, but still, you know, it feels like forever ago. It's been a week. You know, we've, 2 weeks. How long has it been? I don't know. That's right, since Ian's here. Yes, you're right. And since then, you know, we've become famous. Articles in Jerusalem Post, you know. Rami, you have a question or just... It was great to see you, Rami. It's great to see you guys. Like I said, I'm pretty sure that Ray Wasserman is giving next week. I don't know exactly what time. He said the topic is Kibud Av. Maybe Kibud Av Aim. I'm not sure. Maybe just Kibud Av. I wasn't really sure. But I'll let him let you know. But the plan is to have one next week with him. Again, I don't know time, but I'm sure I'll send it out. But it's good to see you guys. Keep in touch. And are all of you all of you are on the Koveh? We've added you all to the Koveh Itim thing for the mini Divrei Torah every day. Okay, good. That also should be every day. I already put up mine from today. I think in general I'm Sundays. I think Roy Sklar is Monday. Ray Ginsburg is Thursday. Shmuel David is Wednesday. So that would mean Rav Ashi is Tuesday or Friday. I don't know. Whatever. We always forget a few days, but hopefully there'll be, you know, 3 to 10 minutes or so every day on that WhatsApp. So keep up the learning, keep in touch, and I'll probably give another share over the summer. And yeah, have a good, for whatever it is for you, good afternoon, guys. Okay? Okay. Talk to you later.